Great. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question on the phone lines, please key star followed by one on your touch tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you'd like to have your question be removed, please key star followed by two. Again, that is star one to ask a question. And your first question comes from the line of Dean Dre with City Investments Research.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Dean.
Hey, Dean.
I would love to hear some color around the assertion on the renewables that we could be reaching the bottom both on the demand as well as pricing. Just what sort of indications, quote activity, et cetera?
Well, I'll start and then let Jeff follow. Dean, basically, if you look, we're working our way through that last wave of the very profitable U.S. Bubble that we had. And you can see the margins and the pricing was really brutal in the quarter. On the other hand, you're starting to see a lot of order activity. And you see the orders in the second quarter and the V we had. We're seeing a lot of global activity. They're at lower margins than that previous U.S. high-priced backlog, but the volume's going to be pretty good. And the last thing I'd say is that there's a program in place where the government obviously gives some benefits to wind installations. It's the production tax credits that are in place through 2012. I think the wind farms would have to be installed and operating before the end of the year. And I think that, depending upon how people view the probability of that being agreed to and extended in the future, you may see some pull in the wind business to put those units in place before the end of 12 here in the U.S. So I think we're starting to have discussions with customers about some of that activity. So I think you're still going to face margin pressure in the second half from wind, but I think you've seen this quarter is, as I said, the worst of it. And with that, Jeff, I don't know if you have anything on the wind market.
I think it's highly likely that we get a lot more volume in the U.S. over the next 18 months. We've got the 1.6 megawatt, which is the highest performing unit. So we're going to gain market share probably in that activity. And then, Dean, what I would say in Canada, Australia, a bunch of other places in the world, the wind wave, if you will, is just taking off. So I think from a unit standpoint and from a pricing standpoint, we're going to see a little bit better performance.
The business has gone from extremely high margins, over 20%, and it'll be down in the, between high single digits to low teens, in this period. So it's been a tremendous performer for us. It's had an incredible amount of economic results it's generated for us, but it's going through a period here where it's resetting. And as I said, I think the second quarter is the bottom of that, but there'll still be additional pressure as we go through the second half of this year.
Great. And if I could
we've taken that into account when you look at the forecast we gave you on that page on first half, second half, Dean.
About that. And then I'd get some additional color on the aviation side. And you touched on this in the remarks, important wind from the American order decision Boeing on reengineering. And just if you could comment on some of the activity and orders coming out of the Paris Air Show. I did hear some grumblings that there might have been some discounting on the service contracts. But just if you take us through, has there been any change in the total economics on these engine orders between what you're expecting on the equipment sale versus service?
Well, I'd say the outlook is very good. We went into the Paris Air Show having spent a few months where, the CFMI team had not really taken a lot of orders on the A320neo. And we came out of that air show with a more than 50% share, a very strong performance. We like the orders that we got. I'm sure that the competitors like the orders they got. The launch is a tough process, but we've been disciplined about our approach. I think we do use everything that is available to us to compete. And our team feels that the economics that we have on these launch orders are as good as we've had on any launches, and we feel great about it. I would add one thing that's a little bit of a real positive here in the last week, obviously, with the American order. When you take a look at the decision by Boeing to re-engine, and we're in a partnership with Boeing on that, this is the third application for the LeapX engine. And we've got a sole source position, and I believe that you're going to see that aircraft in service for well into the 2020s. And that is a tremendous opportunity for the aviation team. We're committed to it. And that investment that we've been making in the LeapX technology for the last several years, has really proven itself, and you can see it now with the sole source position on the C919 in China. We're competing effectively on the A320neo, and now we're going to have a sole source on the next generation of the 737 when Boeing finally approves that at their board level.
I would add, you know, Dean, maybe a couple macro comments on aviation, just to piggyback on what Keith said. If you're an investor and you sit back and just game board commercial aviation from wide body to narrow body to regional jets, and you look at the position GE has, not just for a year or two, but for a decade, you got to like our position. You know, you really have to like where we are on 787, 777, and narrow body. And so you got to like, not just for a quarter, but for a decade, where we are, number one. And then I look financially for aviation, guys. Look, we've got the higher R&D in the run rate. We've got the engines coming down the learning curve. We've got all this service revenue coming through. You know, we're going to be able to grow our aviation operating profit steadily through this cycle while launching these new engines. And so I think we've got the business positioned both strategically and financially exactly where we want it to be positioned for our investors. And that's why I think we like the business.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Dean.
Our next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa of J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Steve.
I didn't quite get the, I guess I didn't quite understand your answer to Dean's question about discounting spares. And I guess on top of that, when you look at aviation, last cycle they hit a margin that was above 20%. With all the kind of moving parts here, I understand there's development expenses and all that kind of stuff. Can you get back to north of a 20% margin in aviation over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years?
Look, let me answer the first point. There was no unusual discounting of spares, which was anything other than we would have done anywhere to win any of those orders. So I think, we have a big business. We have a very profitable service business. We have incredible relationships and long-term contracts with our customers. And there was no crazy stuff that the team did to get those orders. So I just want to be clear on that.
Perfect. Thank you.
You know, if you look at the margins in aviation, I think they're extremely strong. Obviously, they're powered by the incredible installed base we built over the last 15 years. I think right now, the first half, they've been very strong. In the second half, they may be a little lower than what we saw in the first half, but this is a business that's got tremendous girth. I mean, the 40% of the engines still haven't even come in for their first shop visit. We're winning market share on new orders, which is going to continue to build our advantage in the install base over the next 10 or 15 years. I think, as Jeff said, the R&D amount is in the run rate. We told you about that last year, a year ago at the air show, what we're going to have to deal with to launch the Gen X engine and to do the development we needed to be competitive on the A320 and on whatever happened in the 737 world and what we're doing in China. So I think all that's out there and it's in the run rates and we've got a tremendous franchise. So I think this business has the opportunity to have a very high margin for a sustained period of time based on an install base and the tremendous service franchise we have.
Okay, but 20 is not like a good, kind of mid-cycle target?
I don't know.
Steve, look, I think that margins should be able to grow during this time period, and services are going to be very strong during this time period. So,
okay.
I think that's a great target for this team. I'm not giving you a forecast of what the
margin. Yeah, we're not. I'm not going to hold you. Just want to get an idea of when you're booking all these great orders. Clearly, it's a boomer over the next several years. I just the leverage is always a hot button issue, and so I just wanted to have an idea of where that's going. The energy margin in the second half. I mean, it's going to be above 15, but it's going to be below 20. You could fly a 737 through that range
with our engine on it.
It's obviously, again, it's going to be a hot button issue here in the second half. I mean, can you give us any more, directional idea of where within that range? I mean, should we think about the midpoint? I mean, I know this is going to be something that over the next couple of quarters people will be looking at very closely. I just want to have kind of the right bar.
I think I'm not going to pick a margin number here. Obviously, we gave you the direction. I think September 20th, you may know, we've got a separate review, which is just going to be focused on the energy business. And we're going to do that in Cronville, and I think at that point maybe the team will give you a little more look at the dynamics of what the equipment volume is going to do in the second half and how we feel about the mix between equipment and services. But, I, you know, look, they're going to continue to be pressured on the dynamics that you saw in the first half here. The wind business is going to continue to be a drag. We're going to continue to have the acquisitions, which are terrific for us. They're fantastic, and as you go forward, we will continue to improve the margin rates of those acquisitions, but that's a drag in the second half. And on the offset, they're going to have tremendous volume, and I showed you that. So I think, you know, we've laid it out. We're going to have better margins than we had in the first half, but they're not going to get any, you know, we were down a little worse in the second quarter than the first quarter. That will not continue in the second half.
All right, one last one. You know, it seems like things are getting better here in the second half. Is there any reason why your earnings would be down quarter to quarter from second to third quarter? It seems like things are just, you know, continuing to get better. So I'm wondering if there's anything, you know, any one time or anything like that, why earnings would be down, because the street shows down earnings from second quarter to third quarter.
Down earnings.
Well, I think GE Capital, if you look at GE Capital on a run rate, I'm not sure what the street is quarter to quarter. I think for us in GE Capital, you know, we made $1.655 billion. If you look going forward at that there's a couple things that occur in the third quarter that we got to take into account. I think one, we have our normal impairment review at GECAS. We'll have to see how that comes out. And two, in the consumer business, we had a real benefit in delinquencies in the second quarter. And historically, there's an increase in delinquencies in the third quarter in that consumer business, and we'll have to see how that plays out in the market. Those would be the two biggest dynamics that I would think about.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yep. All right.
The details.
Our next question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Julian.
Hey. My first question was on the oil and gas margins. You know, those were down, I guess, a couple of hundred points in the first half year on year. Could you maybe split out sort of what's driving that in terms of, you know, how much things like acquisitions are weighing on that? And if you think in the second half you get the same year-on-year trend on the margins?
Yeah. You know, on oil and gas in the quarter, 50 basis points of the decline was driven by acquisitions. Organically, I think the largest driver is the fact that we had a negative value gap in the quarter, close to $30 million. So pricing and deflation were a negative in total. But if you look, the order price index for oil and gas turned positive. So that was the first time since the second quarter 10. And we're still obviously dealing with a negative price from the prior periods in the quarter. So I think the acquisitions are going to continue to be dilutive to the margins. Obviously, oil and gas has two of the bigger acquisitions affecting them. And we'd probably expect about 50 to 75 basis points in the third quarter and fourth quarter related to those deals. And then organically, we're going to have to see how we do with the value gap. I think pricing is going to be less negative in sales, but it depends on the timing of how fast that orders price works through the backlog, Julian.
Okay, thanks. And then just on the energy business, I mean, you mentioned the price declines, you know, in Q2 on wind and thermal. I mean, how do you sort of expect to manage that? Because I guess the volume pickup is substantial from here, which you highlighted in the slide. So you can't really do much sort of on the headcount or capacity side. Or is your assumption just that pricing will naturally get better in 12 after sort of a 6 or 9 month lag versus volumes turning?
You know, we always go through a formal process on quoting and then backlog and then revenue, right? So when we look at the quoting today, the pricing is actually trending up on the turbines. So, you know, I think there's always a time lag on that as you go through it. And at the same time, we're doing material productivity, 2 to 3% material productivity, and we're still aiming to get some deflation in there as well. So,
plus our service business.
And the service business is extremely strong. So I think the way you got to think about it, Julian, is there's a time lag to the pricing that takes place. That always is the way it goes. And I'd say we're seeing the early indicators of it turning, but that's going to take some time. Services, actually, the pricing is improving and the margins are improving, and that's a good thing. And then we're going to drive productivity and material pricing and things like that at the same time. And, you know, I think you put all those things together, we really believe that, you know, earnings for energy are positive in the second half, and they're positive in 2012 versus 2011.
Thanks. And then just lastly on healthcare, I mean, you guys as well as Philips have had, you know, surprisingly good order growth in the U.S. in the last 3 or 4 months. So I just wondered if you thought that was, you know, a symptom of something broader in terms of the need after sort of 3 or 4 years of underinvestment. You know, there's a couple of years of catch-up spend, or if you expect that order growth to sort of tail off from here.
You know, Julian, I think it's not really a boomer, I wouldn't say. I think it's, you know, what our expectation is for the U.S. is steady market, you know, in the low to mid-single digit type of growth. And if it does better than that, we'll be pleasantly surprised. I'd say, you know, counterbalancing that a little bit is Europe, where you still have a big public spend market in Europe, and that's, you know, that was probably slightly worse than we thought. You know, so the two of them kind of balance each other out.
And the growth in the developing world and our investments in products and distribution are paying off, and you can see those in the numbers in healthcare. I think that's going to be the strength, continuing to be the strength for the rest of this year and probably next year and beyond here. And Jeff described how we thought U.S. and Europe will play for us.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Sprague of Vertical Research.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. One more on energy, and then I'll shift gears. Keith, you gave us the price on orders. Can you give us price on revenues and how that played out in the quarter?
Yeah. Just going to have to find it here. What else you got?
You want to do your second question first,
yeah?
I'm actually wondering on GECAS. I mean, you guys have demonstrated that, you know, the accounting there is maybe a bit more conservative than, you know, some of the other guys that took some impairments, you know, 6 months back or so. But given that the orders have been so dramatic on the NEO and now kind of, you know, this big bump on, you know, on 3.7 re-engine, does that change the landscape of valuations on older narrow bodies dramatically? Have you guys worked through that yet?
You know, we thought about it, obviously. We obviously thought about it on the A320. You know, GECAS has continued to refresh their fleet year after year. If you look, we do have exposure to, you know, a minimal amount of exposure. We got the newest fleet. Our average age is something like 7 years. And we've thought through, you know, how do you the toughest planes right now are clearly the 737 Classics, and we're really, you know, continuing to make sure we got the appropriate valuations on those. And I think we're going to, you know, continue to have to look at that. But I think the team has worked through it, looked at what we think the implications are based on previous transitions from one technology to the next, and they feel good about their valuations. But as I said, we're going to go through the review of aviation valuations again in the third quarter, and we'll have to see if there's any change to that. But clearly over time, Jeff, you know, when these planes finally are put into service and they're 10% to 15% more fuel efficient, you're going to have a residual value impact on the planes, and it will transition in over this period between now and 2015, 16, and 17 when these new, more fuel efficient planes come into the market. So, you know, we have been more conservative, as you said, on how we do depreciation and how we view the residual value on our aircraft versus some of the competitors that we've read about. But I think we're going to have to continue to take it into account, and we've obviously thought about that as we've put investments into these engines and programs and also purchased planes in GECAS.
And if you're still looking for that other answer.
Yeah, no, selling prices, if you look in the quarter on renewables, selling prices were down 11.7%. On gas turbines, on thermal, selling prices were down 1.9%.
Right, and then just finally, if I could, on R&D, I guess you implied it's kind of fully baked, but don't you have a further step up now on the American win on Aero R&D?
You know, Jeff, we really don't. You know, I think the Leap X is kind of in the run rate, and we had anticipated that. You know, the application increase that'll go into the Leap X, right? So you'll have a little bit more in the Leap X,
but you're going to come down in the Gen X.
Yeah, the Gen X is kind of crescent and is heading on the other way down. So that's how I think about it. We're kind of almost done with the Gen X, and to your point, you know, as we do each application, you get charges to certify and stuff like that. So they kind of offset each other.
We will have higher R&D, but as a percent of sales, certainly in aviation, we don't expect it to be greater than the growth in revenue, that's for sure.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All right, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey, so the wind orders in the quarter were really good. The comparison was particularly easy this quarter. They get tougher. I mean, are you still expecting wind orders to be, you know, up in the second half year over year, or was this a particularly strong quarter for some reason?
No, our outlook is that the wind orders are going to continue to be pretty good.
Okay.
I think our pipeline is pretty strong, and as Keith mentioned earlier, some of that is going to go to the Americas.
Yeah, our outlook is that they're going to continue to be up. Not maybe as up as you said. The second quarter comparisons were easy, but our expectation is they'll continue to be up.
And the lead times on these orders are what at this point?
Well, it's a pretty flexible supply chain. You know, I don't know when the last time someone would have to place an order to get it put into service before the end of 12, but I don't know. I'm guessing 6 to 9 months
probably
would be the 6 to 9 months
yeah.
would be the latest probably.
Okay. And then just, you know, you're continuing to generate some, you know, modest gains in commercial real estate and the UK piece, which, you know, I mean, how encouraging is that? And does that give you any hope of sort of accelerating, you know, the wind downs there and the remixing of kind of the asset mix at GE Capital?
Well, it's obviously better than the outlook that we've had over the last couple of years. I think the stabilization has been very positive. The funds flow into high-quality properties has been very positive from both pension funds, insurance funds, and some global investors. You know, we're going to have to see when it crosses over into other broader asset classes. You know, the more mid-market office and, you know, things like the warehouse and some of the multifamily space, you know. It's been encouraging. It hasn't turned into a complete step function change on the valuation on our equity book yet, but certainly the trends are good. And, you know, having the embedded loss go down by $1 billion in the first half is positive. That's based on not only the work we're doing with depreciation and also impairments, but also, you know, not having further declines from a valuation perspective in the marketplace. Occupancy was up a point in the quarter for us. Rents have stabilized. So, you know, I think, you know, we'll have to see how the environment plays out over the next several months and year, but at least we've stabilized and we feel pretty good about the progress the team has made in that portfolio.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Steve Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
Good morning.
Hey,
hi,
Steve. How are
hey.
You?
Good. Just first question around, I'd like to dig in still to the pricing and material deflation question. Around energy, but more broadly. So you guys are still getting material deflation despite the commodity, year-on-year commodity changes elsewhere and what we're seeing across your industries. How should we think about that value gap, particularly given the pricing and the backlog, and how long can you maintain that?
Well, you know, we are seeing material deflation. We'd expect to have, you know, over $300 million of material deflation for the year. We're going to have some inflation on labor, and the pricing, you know, has gone from a positive of a couple hundred million last year to a negative of you know, somewhere between $500 to $700 million. So it's the value gap is negative. Our expectation in 2011 is that it's negative. It's driven by the negative pricing, and you know, our objective is that will level off as we go through 2012. You know, as Jeff said, we're putting out quotes today that are better in pricing than what we're seeing in orders today, but they come in the next 6 months or so into orders, and then it takes another, you know, 9 months, 12 months to get those orders into sales. So I think we're just going to have to work through this backlog. You know, we've anticipated that when we put together the framework we have for 2011. We've anticipated what we know today for what we put together for the framework for 2012. We got to get more material deflation. We got to continue to do a good job of sourcing from low-cost countries. We got to simplify our products and get them to a lower cost point from a variable cost perspective. And we got to be efficient in our investments on the base cost side. So our whole team is focused on the value gap, and that's what we're going to be working on.
You know, Steve, as I said earlier, I'd like to manage the place to get positive margin rate growth in 2012. You know, the way we're going to do that is, you know, good volume. Try to keep the value gap no worse than 12 versus 11. Good services, margin enhancement, and, you know, R&D as a percentage of revenue cresting, right? And those are the key levers, and that's what Keith went through, and that's how we'd like to run the place. You know, we've got to do our operating plans and stuff like that, but that's how I plan to kind of manage the team.
And are you seeing increased competition from what you know, if you think about relative to the last cycle, we've seen sort of maybe a little bit reinvigorated European competition, not to mention, you know, Chinese and other competitors attempting to break into the mature economies. Are you seeing any change on that front at this point?
Look, I think we've got good, we respect our competitors, you know, but I think if you look at what we've done, let's, you know, pick our big aviation. We've launched the Gen X and now the Leap X, and, you know, we've really, I think, reestablished our leadership in aviation. In energy, you're seeing the Flex Fit, you know, the new large frame Flex 50, and now and soon to be left Flex 60. They're going to have the highest efficiency, most flexible gas turbines in the market. The number of products we have has grown substantially. So I think, you know, Steve, look, we respect our competition, but I think we come at this cycle with more weapons than we probably ever had, and so I think that's where the investment has gone.
Right, and I guess I would say, or the question is, if you think about the upcoming gas cycle as it comes, and even the wind cycle on the state mandates, would you expect to be able to get to the same share levels that you had in the last upturn?
Well, look, here's what I would say is we have about 50% share of the gas turbine business today. I certainly don't anticipate it going down, you know. So I think that's you know, we plan to play hard. On wind, wind is kind of a different story. We're always going to have high market share in the U.S. and lower market share on the rest of the world.
Okay. And then just tax rate, Keith, can you maybe address that a little bit in terms of your expectations for the progression there, considering where you came out in the quarter?
Yeah, you know, if you exclude the impact of the NBCU high tax in the first quarter, you know, our expectation is that we're going to have a tax rate for the GE Capital, you know, in the low 20% range, and for GE Capital, we'd expect to have a high teens tax rate as their pre-tax profitability has improved, you know, and the structural benefits have kind of stabilized out at, I don't know, somewhere around $350 million a quarter or so. So there are uncertainties that we have. We've got the 2005 and 2006 and 7 audit that's under review to be closed. You know, if that got closed, that could provide us with benefits that would be maybe beyond those amounts I have. And then obviously any legislative changes that occur, usually they would be prospective. I don't imagine they would hit us this year. So we're anticipating somewhere in the range of what we saw in the second quarter for the year.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from Jason Feldman with UBS.
Good morning.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
Pretty good. So I believe the Federal Reserve took over as regulator at GE Capital earlier this month. Any takeaways or surprises from the first couple of weeks, or do you have any greater clarity on what, if anything, might change there with the new supervision?
Well, you're right. The Fed has become our consolidated regulator in July. We have had a few preliminary meetings with them. Mike Neal and his leadership team, Dave Nason, our head of regulatory. We have had information requests, and we will share information with them. But it's so early, Jason. You know, I think we're going to be completely open and cooperative, and give them access to everything they need. And you know, we look forward to working with them. So we it's too early to say anything about the Fed, but you know, we're as prepared as we could be, but I'm sure it's going to be different than the environment we've been in. We're not a bank, and we're going to have to learn to report more like a financial bank, and that's going to be a challenge. But you know, it's just too early. We have just begun.
Okay. And at commercial lending and leasing, it sounds like originations continue to be quite strong, but you've got pretty broad exposure across small mid-sized businesses. Given the increasingly uncertain macro environment, the debt ceiling debate, what's going on in Europe, have you seen kind of a change in sentiment among your customers, or change in their needs or levels of loan demand kind of as a result of the increasingly uncertain macro environment?
hard to connect the dots between that and some of the volume we see. I mean, I think the environment's been really tough in the U.S. and Europe for the last 2 years, and everything related to providing financial products to customers has been tough. You know, for a while they had a lot less access to credit. Now there's more access to credit, but it's still challenging. You know, I'd have a hard time saying that there's a direct connection between the uncertainty and the debates in Washington or the debt crisis in Europe and the business we're seeing. I think on a relative basis, things continue to improve in our outlook. Our backlog is up in CLL. Our volume is strong. It's the first quarter we had actually collections equal originations in total, even though we've been running off the red assets. The green assets grew. And the pricing is pretty firm. So, for us, the environment feels good and getting better, but I agree there's a lot of uncertainty for that customer base, and I guess it's going to depend on how all these things get resolved as to when people have the confidence to even invest further. But for us, I think it's good and getting slightly better.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling of Goldman Sachs.
Thanks,
Terry.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Keith, I'm wondering if maybe we could see if you have an update on the all-in EPS impact from acquisitions this year, which presumably is dilutive, but I'm wondering if you have an updated number there. And you did mention you felt like the integrations were going well there. I'm wondering if there's an update on what you think the range on EPS accretion for 2012 might be.
I think the best thing I would say is let's see if we can give you an update of that in September at the energy meeting. I think it's less than $500 million pre-tax for the year right now, and that excludes the amounts that were taken at corporate. So I think that's the amount about pre-tax, but we'll give you an update at the energy meeting.
Okay, and then in terms of the integration process, I mean, does that at this point directionally lead you to be more encouraged about what you're seeing from a synergies perspective there, or is it still early days?
Yeah, I think the teams have, the acquisitions that have closed, we feel very positive about. Everyone is a little bit above what the pro forma was for what we expected this soon. You know, we're pretty good at acquisitions, right? We've got our processes, we send in our teams, we've got a lot of integration plans, we do a 100-day checklist, we've got a lot of formal reporting, we have a lot of additional resources that go in, And I think everything from our perspective on the oil and gas and energy deals is a little bit above pro forma right now. So we like the businesses we bought. They obviously fit with GE well, and they've got good teams, good technology, and they're off to a good start.
Orders are good.
Okay, and then Keith, wondering if you could also maybe continue the kind of puts and takes on GE Capital, you know, beyond the third quarter, you know, where you talked about some of the some of the issues that probably. I mean, GE Capital EPS in the third quarter off a little bit, which is normal seasonally. But I guess I'm trying to, balance the other pieces. So losses are coming down, but the asset base is shrinking. On the other side of the coin, maybe you can comment on new business margins. And, 2012 overall, I know you're thinking up, but I'm wondering if you've got any more color in terms of magnitude of up based on, how those puts and takes are shaping up for you.
Well, Jeff puts two pluses on top of the bar,
so that's 10% plus growth.
I'd say, look, I think if I gave you some of the things in the third quarter. Obviously, the business continues to improve. We had $1.4 billion of write-offs in the quarter. That's about 1.8% of financing receivables. We had $800 million of provision. That's only 1.05% of financing receivables. I think the provision. So that brought the reserve balance down about $550 million. Our coverage is good at 2.3%, in line with the asset improvements. The $800 million provision, I think that's lower by about $150 million if you look in the supplementals from some recoveries we've had where the amounts that we recovered were greater than the book value that we had. So that shows up actually as a reduction in the provision. And plus, we did have some reserve releases in the quarter, about half of that, $150. So, if you put that together, you're probably going to look at over time, if you go back to 2003 through, 2007, you're probably dealing with a 1.2, 1.3% type of provision that you should be dealing with. And that would be a more normalized thing. And we're getting close to normal. I think the only thing that's really not normal yet is real estate, and that's got a lot of room for improvement, and that's going to provide a lot of earnings growth.
That's what I was going to say, Terry. Your bluebird here is real estate, really. And I think, we've seen a benefit from more liquidity if you had a combination of some employment improvement plus liquidity, that's going to get a lot better a lot faster, you know. And so I think that's really the upward swing on GE Capital.
You know, the one, obviously, in the first quarter, the sizable Garanti gain doesn't repeat. I think that's the one thing that you would clearly look at just as a one-time item here, Terry.
And, you know, you did have a lot of originations in the quarter. I mean, where are margins on new business at this point? Have they come off a little bit of where the highs were last year? Are we still running hot there? Or what's happening at the margin with that?
They're still above a 2. You know, we've had a very solid performance. Mike Neal and the team have been incredibly disciplined on pricing and our objective to get our returns up. And so they've been very disciplined, and they've continued to have very good margins. They're not as high as the peak, but they're still very strong.
And lastly, and I hope relatedly, you know, pace of buyback in the second half. Obviously, you've got the Buffett preferred. You spent $1 billion or so in the first half of the year. Looks to be scoped to go higher than that in the second half if you wanted to. But, you know, maybe you just comment on pace of buyback given the overall GE mosaic in the second half.
Well, we'll see. I think, you know, just the preferred, just to be clear, you know, that's $3.3 billion. We'll retire 20% of what we did in 2008 in the fourth quarter in one swoop here when we retire that preferred. So that is the priority right now. But we'll continue to do the buyback, and we'll continue to be opportunistic around the buyback.
You know, Terry, I would just add what I said at EPG. We've got plenty on our plate from an acquisition integration standpoint. You know, our near-term emphasis is going to be dividend growth and buyback.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Terry. Hey, Chanel, we're hit our time, and we have a lot of companies reporting today. But let's take one more here because we still have one or two in the queue.
Okay, sure. Your next question comes from John Inch of Merrill Lynch.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Hey, Keith, just so I'm clear in terms of your commentary around provisions, the provisions are down a lot at Capital year over year, which was sort of expected, and it's a kind of a positive data point. Are we at that stasis today in terms of the trajectory, or would you still expect absolute dollar downward trajectory given your commentary?
I'm sorry, on just the loss provision?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look in the quarter at $800 million and 1.05%, that's a little lower than what our historic amount would be pre-crisis, and it's got two things in it in the quarter that we have to think about the dynamics. I'm not saying exactly what they're going to be going forward, but first of all, in the consumer space, we continue to see a very strong performance in asset quality. The delinquency decline was greater than we'd seen previously from the first quarter to second quarter in the portfolio, and that resulted in lower provisions.
Second
thing is in the quarter we had about $150 million of recoveries that were greater than our asset value that showed up as a reduction in the provision, and also some reserve releases. It was about split 50-50. And so, you know, that as a one-timer reduced the provision in the quarter a little lower than you normally would have seen.
Okay, so that makes sense. Keith, the businesses that you've been divesting in Capital, which, you know, is part of the plan, what kind of a headwind does that create, though, in 2012 because of the absence of the contribution benefit of the earnings that you're not going to realize next year? Is there a way to size that at this juncture?
You know, I think the biggest one is Garanti. You know, obviously that was just on the gain alone was 3 cents, and then, you know, they're making $50 million a quarter.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, I think the range would be up to another penny and a half to 2 pennies, maybe. It depends upon what we get done in the second half here, but that would be a range for you.
That makes sense. And then maybe just lastly, could you guys comment on what's happening with respect to Japan sort of broadly, but then Japan as it pertains to your thermal business? You're hearing, they're certainly ordering a lot of your product. I mean, what's sort of been the impact, and maybe you could sort of size that for us?
Well, we had about $600 million in the quarter of orders in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Thermal was half of that, but that was energy orders. Aero derivative was very strong. And I think, you know, Jeff, you can talk about what you see as the outlook there for additional. We didn't have a big impact in the supply chain. We didn't have a big impact in the country itself in the quarter. I think the orders were good, but other than that,
I think, John, there's going to be another wave of thermal orders. You know, it's kind of like this is the summer of 2011, then we'll get ready for the next summer of 12 and 13. So my hunch is that there'll be another wave of thermal orders.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, everyone. We're going to wrap the call today. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon. We'll be distributing our quarterly supplemental data schedule for GE Capital later today, probably a little earlier, around noon today. I have some announcements regarding upcoming investor events. As Keith mentioned, we're going to be hosting our GE Energy investor meeting on September 20th at our Crotonville facility in New York. We'll provide more meeting logistics and information upcoming in August. And our third quarter 2011 earnings webcast will be on October 21st. As always, we'll be available today to take your questions. Thank you, everyone.